The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and enter the offer code Guardian to get 20% off throughout the month of September. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly. Today, Gunners go top as Ozil aids Black Cat's disposal. Man United take a leaf from Will and Kate and have an easy time at home with Palace. And Everton take a leaf from Football Weekly and win with Barry. We round up the Premier League weekend and look abroad. There's Gareth Bale's secret move to Real, Ronaldo's new underpants, Borussia Dortmund now even better, Inter Juventus Napoli top, and why three in the derby is worth one coach in the bush. All of that, plus some simply terrific Champions League previews in today's Football Weekly. Crikey, it's Barney Rohn, eh?
It's very good to be back.
Yeah. Barry Glendinning's also here.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. And look at this. Michael Cox of zonalmarking.net. You're either borrowing someone else's jacket or you've got buff.
Thanks. Yeah, no, it's my own jacket, actually.
Right.
And my own tan.
You've got
as
buff.
Well.
Right. Yeah, you're just back from Portugal.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, thank it you. Is. Portugal is good.
It's a very nice country, actually.
Yeah, yeah, like yeah. Portugal. And you watched a lot of football this weekend?
Yeah, I thought the Saturday games were fantastic.
In the Premier League?
Saturday evening. And in La Liga, there was two really good games.
And Serie A was pretty good as well.
And Serie A was good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Sunday was pretty dull.
All right. Okay. Barney, you didn't watch much football. You kind of handled the rest of life side of things.
Well, I had a weekend off from going to a game, but I always keep very up to date.
Did you watch Match of the Day, your favourite show?
Yeah, I always watch Match of the Day.
What did you think about it this weekend?
It is what it is. You know, they don't have much time to talk. They've been left behind.
They've
That's
got 90
problem.
Minutes.
Yeah, well, they've got to show all the football. It's the BBC. They can't afford not to show every game. They can't afford not to be generally nice and bland about things. And Gary Lineker's very good. I actually think he should probably be a pundit rather than a host. I kind of would rather hear what he's got to say, wouldn't you?
Mm. But then who'd present, Barney?
It doesn't really matter. I did talk to someone about
what do you
this,
mean?
Actually. Presenters are irrelevant. Sorry. I think it should be just a two-hander, actually.
Yeah.
I think it should be just...
Like Smith and Jones or whatever.
Yeah, a bit like that. Gary Lineker and an interesting person.
Right.
Just having a conversation in between a few games. You don't need to sit around that god-awful coffee table waiting for these big sullen heads to say things.
It's an entire like this, TV really. Paradigm yeah. You're dissing there.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just stuck in... You know, it's funny when Lineker accused England of being stuck in the Dark Ages.
Right, interesting.
Stuck in... Although it was actually very good in the 60s Match of the Day. I mean, Jimmy Hill was brilliant. He'd watch the game,
Charter
a private plane to come back from the game and then talk in a very animated, involved way about what he'd actually just seen in the stadium.
Yeah, that's the thing I always find strange about Match of the Day. The commentators are there and see the game, but they don't get to comment on the match.
No, and Hill did everything. He was commentator, analyst. On the plane, he'd have someone touching up his greying beard with mascara to make him screen ready.
I'm disappointed he didn't do that himself as part of his one-man
band approach.
Well, indeed, yeah,
disappointing. But, you know, he was brilliant. He was passionate, wrong, but very, you know, you've been actually watching that happen. You can talk about it with some energy.
Is there not one figure that we could bring in to do a similar job? Could the Neveller, could he do it?
I think this is the problem with English football. We always want an easy solution, don't we? One figure. I think we need a root and branch approach to this. Our seven-year-old should be, you know, doing far more advanced punditry at, you know, smaller...
Right, yeah. Okay, excellent. Good. Now, in other news, this weekend, well, Arsenal went top, at least until Monday night's clash between Swansea and Liverpool. Arsenal went top. It was the eagerly awaited debut of Mesut Ozil. And what a start, Barry. What a start. Against your Sunderland.
Yeah, he was very impressive. And he set up a goal. He had some sublime touches. He would have set up far more than one goal if Theo Walcott had been more ruthless and clinical with his finishing.
Mm.
I'm as critical of Sunderland as anyone, but I thought they were rather unlucky on Saturday. Mm.
The only man with worse decision-making than Theo Walcott, perhaps, was referee Martin Atkinson, blowing the whistle just when Sunderland
were about to equalise. Well, they had equalised.
Yeah. And well, he actually did blow the whistle before. Yeah,
so...
I don't really get all that stuff about that decision. There was a foul going on, and he decided there'd be a more of an advantage in that situation to blow. That, you know, make that split second
but
decision.
But that's the wrong decision.
It's the wrong decision, yeah. But people make wrong decisions all the time. What happened afterwards is irrelevant. But the whistle had gone.
It's the whole thing about playing the advantage that it isn't a split second decision. Just let it go and see what
happens.
It
was in that it was two blokes wrestling, and you have to decide, well, you know, what's going to happen here? Is this, you know, do I stop the game or not?
Well, Altidore is a big, big unit, so there was always a very good chance he was going to win that particular tussle.
Seemed to be a lot of pro Paolo Di Canio chants before and after his trip to the stands, which was interesting. Theo Walcott, who got a little bit of stick here on the pod on Thursday, didn't do anything to particularly change, I think, Jacob and Ian McIntosh's mind there. But one man who has been changing, winning over the critics and convincing the sceptics, is that man, Ramsey. How about him?
Yeah, he's been excellent, not just at the start of this season, but the back end of last season. He did really well. And I think it's nice to see because he's a very talented player. He's obviously had his fitness problems, which have been well documented. I gather he was quite affected as well by what happened with Gary Speed, who named him Wales captain at a very young age. I think that was quite difficult for him. There was one point where he was clearly just absolutely physically exhausted. Now he's had a good pre-season. I think he feels part of the first team, a big member of the dressing room. And he's been excellent. He's got wonderful technique, Ramsey. He's a much calmer player than Wilshere. Wilshere's very talented, but always diving in, always driving at the opposition. Ramsey is something a little bit more, you know, a little bit more guile, a little bit more ability to dictate the game, I think. And the fact that he's scoring goals as well is another string to his bow.
Do you think he's a better player than Wilshere?
I've never had so much stick on Twitter as when I said I thought Ramsey was a better player than Wilshere a couple of years ago. And I maintain that. I just think he's got more about him. His decision-making is better, I think. He's a less flash player. He's less noticeable than Wilshere. But when you watch him over two or three games, I think he's... I think he has the potential to be a better player.
Well, he's had a brilliant start. Two goals in this game, five now all season. In this match as well, he made more tackles than any other player on either side. He made more passes than any other player on either side too.
Well, it's another sort of little feather in his cap for Arsene Wenger, isn't it? I mean, he was a stick used to thrash Wenger with at times. And oh, maybe he was right, sticking with him.
Arsene knows, eh? Crikey. Giroud has picked up a knock, and there is now doubt about whether he will be able to participate in the Champions League game for Arsenal this week, which sees them travel to Marseille. Very much the group of death, this, not the teams they'll be facing, but the alternatives for Wenger if Giroud is not fit. Chupa Agpom, Emmanuel Frimpong and Nicholas Bentner being the names in question.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal's bench looked very threadbare on Saturday, so... While it's great they have Ozil and, you know, any team would be delighted to have him, I'm sure, apart from Real Madrid. The shortcomings they suffer from in other areas of the field that people said they needed to strengthen are glaringly obvious. So if the players like Giroud do pick up a knock, it's going to become woefully apparent how short they are in terms of personnel.
Don't you think the point about Arsenal, they should have bought this, they should have bought that. Instead, they bought a really good attacking midfielder. I mean, don't you just think that's great, though, really? I mean, do you want Arsenal to buy a defensive midfielder? And I don't, really. I mean, it's not... There's just something wonderful about them having a strength and building at that strength. And there is a view that that's what you should do. I mean, people have been going on about Barcelona buying a massive centre-back and a proper centre-forward for a while, haven't they? But they don't seem to be particularly interested in doing that. I mean, if you have a strength, work at that strength. And, you know, they were also missing top quality in that strength that they have now.
Yeah.
I think it's great, you know, very entertaining.
They've now put a roof on the Velodrome. I don't know if you've been there lately. They put a roof on it, and there's an absolutely terrific, an incandescent atmosphere awaiting the Gunners on either Tuesday or Wednesday, depending when they're playing there.
Wednesday.
It is Wednesday, yeah. Is it? Right. What do you feel about that one, Michael? Have you been scouting this fixture out at all?
Not particularly. I do quite like Marseille. I think Valbuena, their attacking midfielder, is wonderful. I think if Arsenal hadn't got Ozil and they had tried to get an alternative, he would have been the obvious solution. But it's a big game for Arsenal because of the fact it's not against one of the two more difficult sides. It means they have to win this because picking up results against Napoli and Dortmund will be very difficult.
Yeah, it's a crazy group at the moment. Napoli top of Serie A, Dortmund top of the Bundesliga. We'll talk about them in a second or two. And Arsenal before the Liverpool game, top of the Premier League as well. Marseille lost the lead the previous round in Ligue 1 to Monaco, and they could only scrape a 1-1 draw away to Toulouse this weekend 87th minute header. It was a brilliant header as well from Mendes, a Brazilian defender. But they're looking a little bit vulnerable at the back, although they have a terrific keeper. It's in Mandanda. Mm-hmm. Mm. Good. Got a raised finger from Barney Roney there. Very much a sign of approval. I enjoyed Arsenal's trip to Sunderland, but not as much as I enjoyed Everton-Chelsea. What a match that was.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. I enjoyed Jose Mourinho's reaction afterwards. But I thought he wasn't as cross as I thought he'd be. I mean, he was obviously full of disdain and very rude and all that kind of stuff. But, they dominated possession for periods of the game. Had something like 31 shots at goal, couldn't score. I saw something on the Guardian website today actually saying that Chelsea's problem last season was they're overly reliant on Oscar, Mata and Hazard creating things for them. There's one way of looking at it. I mean, they have no problem creating chances. Obviously, they could do with somebody to stick the ball in the net.
Yeah.
But I have no doubt that Mourinho will deal with that. I mean, it's a very messy, ragged Premier League this year. I mean, people have said about teams coming back strong, but I actually think so many changes, so much spent on players who haven't played in the league before as well.
Yeah.
I think the quality is really low, but at the moment, brilliant players in there. But it's very interesting to see how managers are coping with it. And I think Mourinho is better than anyone at getting momentum going and dealing with that kind of situation. That's what he's good at. And I think he knows he will be able to cope with it.
I did some counting this morning.
All right.
This day last year, there were 109 goals scored in the Premier League. The season before, 94. Before that, 115. Before that, 125.
I mean, I could go
before
on.
Before that, 114. Yeah. This season, there's only been 74.
Right, it's remarkable, isn't it? Premier League way down the scoring charts as regards Europe's big leagues. We actually were talking about this Sunday night on BT Sport. Very much the Bundesliga has gone crazy with goals. 3.33 a game in Serie A, 3.17 a game. Premier League currently less than 2 a game, 1.95.
Yeah, even France is ahead of the Premier League, and they're usually quite goal shy.
Right. The top division, you're probably curious to know, Barney, you're about to ask perhaps, which is the top division if I want to see a lot of goals a game?
Is it the Dutch?
No. Strangely enough, it's actually the Norwegian third division, where they're averaging 5 goals a game. I don't know what's going on in Norway, but I want to. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, you can see it in action at Spurs. You know, they've got a lot of very good new players there, and they're desperately trying to work out how their attacking patterns are going to work. And
you've skipped forward on my script for Spurs. We could do them now. Do you want to do Spurs quickly now?
Right.
Go on, you mentioned them. What a debut, a weekend of big debuts. And Christian Eriksen. Pow!
He's a really good player, isn't he? It's funny, I remember I went to the Euros game. I was thinking about the Euros game last year between Denmark and Germany, where him and Ozil both played. And that was billed as a kind of meeting of playmakers. And they were both dreadful. I mean, Eriksen perhaps he wasn't there. But Ozil was having a very bad Euros, but he ran around a lot.
Well, that's the thing. For ages, people have been saying Eriksen, he's a flatter to deceive. He's actually not that good. And he comes in, he looked brilliant.
Well, he was playing against Norwich.
Oh, yeah.
And Norwich also another new team. I looked at them. They have a single player. 10 of their players weren't there before 2012. They're also a very new team. But he looked great. I mean, when he gets a bit of space, he's also someone who can, you know, lay a pass on a plate, so to speak.
I don't think it's unfair to have criticised Eriksen because he at two major tournaments, you know, he was sort of trumped beforehand as one to watch, and then was very disappointing in both. But he is,
means he'll fit right in the Premier League.
He is still very young, so you know, his time on his side, and
right. Good stuff. Now, I did want to mention Everton and brilliant debut for Gareth Barry, eh? That last-ditch tackle on Eto.
Yeah, that was excellent, but that was kind of, it was last-ditch, he was a little bit desperate. I thought his overall game as well was pretty good. He kind of commanded the midfield zone, his passing range was impressive. I thought Everton were really good, actually. I expected, you know, looking at the teams on paper, I thought Everton can have all of the ball, Chelsea will just go on two counter-attacks and win 2-0. But Everton were quite cautious in the way they attacked. They dominated possession, but they didn't chuck everyone forward. Baines wasn't overlapping so much, Coleman wasn't overlapping so much. And it meant that Chelsea didn't really put together many counter-attacks. They had two or three at the end of the first half. But overall, I thought Everton were good value for their win. And actually, on the goals per game, I thought that was a great example of a game that didn't have goals, but was really excellent from first to last.
That's true, that's true. Passing stats indicate that Everton are actually passing the ball 25% more this season under Martinez than they were under Moyes.
Mm.
Now, Chelsea, they're at home to Basel, who they met in the Europa League semi-finals, of course, just last season.
They did. In fact, last week I saw a man wearing a Chelsea road to... Where was the Europa League final last year? Was it Amsterdam?
Yes, it was, yes. Yeah.
Road to Amsterdam final in the Europa League, and it was the most unimpressive T-shirt I've ever seen in my life. Like scraping drawers away at Slavia Prague or whatever. I don't even know who they were playing.
Oh, come on. Right. I think that Europa League win is really underrated. I mean, I thought that was great for Benitez. You know, I mean, what can he do? He can win.
No, fair play. That they did everything they asked, but I just wouldn't get it on a T-shirt. I wouldn't get those particular results.
Maybe it has a cultish kind of niche appeal among Chelsea
fans. Yeah, possibly.
Basel have a cultish niche appeal these days, don't they?
Yeah, well, I'm going to that game.
Are you?
I'd be very grateful for any information Michael, for example, could share on Basel's season so far.
Jonathan Wilson has written something backing them to qualify from the group.
I saw that.
That's all I know.
What was his basis for that then?
They're quite a good team, and Schalke aren't a very good team.
All right. But there's another team in there as well. There's Steaua Bucharest.
Yeah, apparently they're not very good either.
All right.
Yeah. I didn't think Basel did themselves justice in that semi final. They froze in the first leg and. Mm. That left it too late. Then I think we're 3-0 down after the first leg. But Marco Streller scored 4 in 5 games for them so far this season, so he'd be the danger man.
Right, and of course Murat Yakin, the former Swiss international, now very much pulling the strings for Basel. That'd be an interesting game. That great buffet beforehand.
Yeah, the buffet's excellent, and I think Chelsea will do very well in Europe this year.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you know that this game will be 6 years to the day since another game for Chelsea in Europe, the match against Rosenborg, the 1-1 draw that ushered in the beginning of the end, or the end of the beginning. I got one of the two. Now, in other news, Man City are going to be at Victoria Pilsen. Hey, they dodged a bit of a bullet at Stoke, didn't they? If you're a Man City fan, after the loss to Cardiff, the narrowly scraping a win against Hull, and then this, should you be worried with this Pellegrini business?
I wouldn't say worried, but it didn't seem to be a very impressive performance from them, especially because now you don't really associate Stoke away with being as difficult as it was under Pulis, because they're trying to move away and you think this will be the slight transition period where a trip to Stoke wouldn't be such a big deal. They just don't seem to be, you know, like Barney said, they're good players. By the end of the season, they're going to be a good team, but they don't really know each other.
Is it because Pellegrini's too nice? You know, everyone was on Mancini's back for being just... really, really grim and miserable, but you know, at least the players looked like they cared about the result. Are they actually not bothered enough, do you think, Barney?
Well, I mean, that would be astonishing if they weren't bothered. Really? I mean, you don't get to be one of the
best.
But
nice managers, you know.
Is he that nice? I mean,
he seems quite pleasant.
Is he not an iron glove within a velvet hand?
Oh, maybe that's what
I don't know. But it is a long-term project. It's ridiculous to try and judge him after 4 games. I mean, isn't the whole point with him that
should we just come back in March or something?
He has had a lot of injuries as well. I mean, missing three or four first-choice defenders against Stoke.
Yeah, but he's got that massive squad, isn't he?
But it sounds like, I haven't seen this game, but it sounds very much like Stoke left the 3 points behind them and should have won.
Absolutely.
They seem to miss a lot of sitters from what I've heard.
Yeah, I mean, they're coming off this disappointing, 0-0 at Stoke, and now they face the Champions League, which has been their bête noire, I'm going with, in recent years. They've only had one win on the road in the Champions League in 6 attempts, Barney. By contrast, these Pilsen fellas, they've only lost one of their last 11 at home in Europe.
I think this will be a difficult game, by the way, actually. I watched a couple of Pilsen's qualifiers, and they look to be a really good team. It's really tough to judge because they're playing against, you know, relatively mediocre opposition. But they're very young, they're very quick, they transfer the ball forward very nicely. It reminds me a little bit of Dortmund. It's impossible to judge how they're going to play against some of the best players in the world.
When did you see them play?
I've read something in World Soccer magazine about them about 3 months ago, and they sounded really interesting. And then when it's these Champions League qualifying games, I went on the red button and watched one of their games. I thought they're excellent, really, really good.
They beat Atletico Madrid and Napoli in the Europa League last season, so they must have something about them. You know, I don't think they're going to be pushovers.
Mm. I'm going to watch this game anyway. I think it'll be interesting.
Brilliant.
They've entertained one English team before in their history. Grimsby Town.
Really? So. Okay, what happened there?
I don't know.
All right.
Was that a friendly or? Must have been.
It must have been, yeah. I can't imagine Grimsby Town wherever in Europe.
Woof. blimey, there's football all over the place. Everywhere you look, it's football. Man United, who are fresh from their victory over Crystal Palace, will now be taking on Bayer Leverkusen in what David Moyes has revealed that Sir Alex Ferguson told him is the toughest group they've ever been in, which is worrying when you think that you're talking about, Barney, people coming in with Euro experience. Well, David Moyes has never been near the Champions League. I mean, you think how long it took Sir Alex Ferguson to come to grips with it.
But yeah, weren't they involved in a...
Oh, yeah, they did have that.
Qualified.
He has been involved in the Champions League. I take that back.
Well, I don't think it was particularly a great experience.
Auspicious, no.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, he's not an inexperienced manager. He's a talented man. He's, you know...
Yeah, but Europe's different, isn't it?
A bit different. I mean, playing Bayer Leverkusen will be slightly different. I mean, this is the real test of his appointment. They can't afford not to do well in the Champions League. They need to hit the ground. They can't have a bedding in period. And yeah, I mean, it will be fascinating to watch.
Do you think it is their toughest group ever, Michael?
Well, they were once in a group with Barcelona and Bayern Munich in 99, weren't they? Was that a second group?
Yes.
If it was a second group phase, then I'd take his point. Yeah. But
well, the other two teams in there, just in case you were wondering, they're taking on Bayer Leverkusen this week. Real Sociedad, who people are making noises about. Not quite sure what kind of noises, but anyway. And Shakhtar Donetsk, who've lost big players like Willian and Mkhitaryan, but they've also brought in players whose names I don't have.
Bernard.
Got that one.
It is a tough group, to be fair.
Is it?
Three tough away trips.
It's a really tough trip. I mean, David Moyes, he's never managed a match. Well, he has managed abroad, but he's never managed a match in the Donbass Arena, that kind of stage. It's a funny old place. It's very close to the border with Russia. It's a long way away. The crowd are very passionate. In fact, the last time I was there, Roman Abramovich was in the crowd, and he was given a standing ovation by the entire stadium as though he were royalty.
Did Hadaway make an appearance or not?
No Hadaway
this time, okay. Bayer Leverkusen...
Well, they've got Sami Hyypiä in charge,
and it's
his first taste of proper Champions League football as a manager as well, I think. He's apparently doing a very, very good job there. So
they're third in the Bundesliga. They're fresh from a 3-1 win over Wolfsburg. He says, I hope my players haven't come just to get Wayne Rooney's autograph, because maybe Wayne's not going to give it to them. I think was his point.
Can't write, that kind of thing.
Yeah. All right, that's Bayer, who was, to say, a third. Immediately above them in the Bundesliga are Bayern, who had a 2-0 win over Hanover. They're, you know, looking strong again. Little bit more. We had Rafa on that Sunday night show. He was saying that they're looking a little bit more cohesive at the back, but less expressive going forward now as the team evolves under Pep. And they are going to be at home to CSKA Moscow, which he sees as a reasonably easy fixture. Very exciting game it was against Hanover, mainly because of the kit, which basically... They've gone for a kind of Lederhosen-inspired ensemble with kind of Lederhosen-style socks, brown shorts, and then a white top. But crucially, the tracksuit has been redone to look like, you know, those beer clinic Oktoberfest jackets that they wear with the funny little alpine hat.
Tyrolean hat.
Yeah, they've done that. They've done the jacket like that. So when they come out for the game, it looks like they're about to kind of serve a couple of steins. And
do they look slightly ridiculous? Because with Lederhosen...
No, you're obviously not getting the right impression at all here. It's Lederhosen, Barry, and Oktoberfest, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I see it catching
but
on myself.
But Lederhosen are those leather shorts with the
very
kind
much
of
so, yeah.
suspender, bracy, braces type.
Right.
I think it's quite...
Apparently they're really expensive, Lederhosen.
Yeah, that's right, they are, yeah. But it's quite appropriate. I mean, Bayern was a... There was a club formed by outsiders to Bavaria who got really into the idea of Bavaria and were slightly kind of intellectuals and academics who went there and said, let's have a Bavarian club. And they've always been a bit showy, you know, and a little bit kind of... They used to play in kind of slightly dandyish fashion back in the...
Well, those days are back because it's Lederhosen Ahoy.
Yeah, well, yeah,
I hope they're
going to
bust...
Like it's always been a slightly kind of fun club in that way. Back in its foundation years, you know. It was.
I'd like to see more clubs introduce kits based on their heritage. Although I'm struggling to think of any comic example at this point.
Well, actually, Poppy Dinsey, who runs the website What I Wore Today.
I can't believe going back to this one, Barry.
she tweeted an extraordinary picture yesterday. I think it was London Fashion Week was on, and I think it must have been Julian McDonald's show. But one of the models was wearing this extraordinary dress, which was all done out.
Was it a dress, or was it actually a trouser and blouse ensemble?
I thought it was a dress.
Was it a
mistake? I'm not involved.
But it had Rangers all over it.
Yeah, the Rangers, giant Rangers crest and done in red, white and blue.
Hmm.
So it was most peculiar.
Right, okay.
I can't see it really, that kind of thing, you know, dresses fabricated from assorted football clubs' shirts taking off somewhere.
Right, perhaps vice versa would be more interesting. Producer Ben's suggesting that Man United's kit last season was gingham. To do with the heritage, was it? But anyway, above the Leverkusen Bayern are Borussia, who are off to their best start ever in the Bundesliga. They've won, is it 5 from 5? No, I think it is. And they came up with a 6-2 win over Hamburg this weekend, prompting the usual jokes about mincemeat and all that. But here's an amazing stat about Borussia, because a lot of people said, well, you know, they got to the Champions League final with Goetze, and then they didn't. That was their moment to do it. Now that team's going to get broken up. Lewandowski stayed, Goetze went. They brought new players in, and Klopp interestingly made this comment about we can use change to our advantage. He's done exactly that, because the new players coming in, they have contributed 64% of the goals from the new players. That's very good, isn't it?
Well, I think it's really,
that was my stat. I was excited about that.
No, it's good. It's good. I guess it's the template for what you should do when you lose one of your best players, as Spurs have done. You don't buy a direct replacement, spend all your money in one go. You improve the team overall. And I think the amount they spent for Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan was exactly the amount they got for Goetze.
Brilliant.
So they've got rid of one decent player and signed two decent players.
All right. Now, they, as I say, absolutely flying in the Bundesliga. They face Napoli, who are in similar form in Serie A, 3 straight wins, scored 9, only conceded 2. This is the game of the round, isn't it?
It's the best group in the competition, so whichever game involves those three sides, Dortmund, Napoli and Arsenal, is going to be the game of the round, I think.
Right. It's going to be a big one at the San Paolo. The Italians are quite bullish about their chances of halting Dortmund's progress here, but I'm not so sure. They've always looked a bit shaky at the back. I know Benitez is perhaps a little bit more defensive-minded than Mazzarri was, but Campagnaro's gone off to Inter, and I don't see any significant additions to the side at the back. So
you've got Albiol.
Oh, Albiol, yeah, that's true. And Pepe Reina between the posts.
And they clearly wanted another one because they were after Skrtel, weren't they? Mm. I think they're going to go back for him in January. So I agree, maybe a little bit bare at the back.
Mm. Mentioning kits, actually, they unveiled a camouflage kit. Yeah, camo in their 2-0 win over Atalanta on Saturday.
I thought that was Genoa's kit.
Hey! Because, Baron Bunny, you're looking perplexed. Because
I always look perplexed.
All right. Ahead of the Genoa derby this weekend on Sunday night. What happened, Barry?
A Genoa youth team coach was caught hiding behind some bushes at Sampdoria's training ground, spying on them. And he was, I think someone described him as being dressed like Rambo.
Well, he was,
He was in full...
He was wearing a German army kit, actually.
Camouflage, bizarrely. Fatigues and whatnot. Yeah.
And so, he was just standing in a...
He was sat in the bush. Well, basically there's hills above the training ground that look down, and they're very wooded. And he was in there. I don't know how they found him.
How could they have possibly detected him?
I don't know, but they saw the sunlight glinting off his binoculars. Or maybe they have some kind of anti-personnel detection system there. I wouldn't put it past them. Anyway, so they find him there, and Genoa released this SAMP released a statement saying, they're spying on us, but we take no prisoners in the derby, all this business. Genoa then say, no, he was acting off his own bat. We had no knowledge of his initiative, and he's being suspended forthwith. He went rogue, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much the plot of Rambo, isn't it?
Yeah, although they drew first blood, crucially, which I'm not sure if Genoa can argue in this case. But whatever he saw that day on the training ground, it proved of immense use to Genoa, because they absolutely destroyed Samp. I mean, Samp did most of the football until the final third. Genoa had, I think, 3 shots, and they scored 3 goals, and they looked absolutely brilliant. We got a little bit off the beaten track, because I wanted to mention...
Did you just say someone's got a camouflage football kit?
Yes, I did, yeah.
How is that possible? Yeah. Isn't that not allowed?
Well, presumably it helps the linesman can't see you offside, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but you can't pick out players with a pass because you can't see them.
It'd be like Manchester United at Southampton.
It's not a stealth kit. It's basically kind of a foliage, which is going to stand out in most contemporary
stadiums.
So
they've actually got that kind of fake leaves and things.
It'd be like Tom Berenger's outfit from Sniper, where he looked like basically a big straw hut.
Sniper? I'm not familiar with that film.
You're not familiar with Sniper?
It's a great film.
Which one was that? I thought you were going to go with Platoon. Sniper and Billy
Zane. Tom Berenger played a sniper in Sniper, and he used to wear this camouflage, but it was like seriously OTT straw, giant hayrick on his head, basically. So
I'm surprised it's not been done. I think Glamorgan used to have a camouflage cricket kit.
Did they?
It was very depressing somehow watching them play in it.
Hmm. You know, cricket very much at the avant-garde as regards to, you know, fresh...
That probably would work, because the fielders could kind of sneak around a bit. And football, it wouldn't work.
Right. Here comes a top Rambo quote. I guess you're going with the Stallone character, not the 19th century French dissolute. Courtesy of producer Ben. To win war, you got to become war. Got to become war. It's interesting. Mm. All right. On that note, Borussia Dortmund, Napoli. Other games? A couple of other games?
AC Milan, Celtic.
Yeah. Here's a question from Mark. He says, how weak are AC Milan ahead of Wednesday's game against Celtic? Barry.
Well, I know they have several injuries. I couldn't tell you the specific players who were out, but I did see an interview with their manager in which he said, presumably after the game over the weekend, that they might have problems against
Celtic.
Right,
I'm going to fill in a couple of the blanks there.
They were thank you for rescuing. I don't know why you even handed over to me there. Well,
you mentioned it. Sorry.
You just wanted to see me flounder.
No, I just said... they're not looking the sharpest, AC Milan. Their big transfer signing was bringing Kaká back at the age of 31 and then declaring that he was exactly the same player who arrived here 10 years ago, which clearly wasn't true, as we discovered as Milan took to the field against Torino on Saturday evening. They went 2-0 down. They scraped a 2-2 draw courtesy of one or two questionable decisions. Montari's goal, which I don't know if you saw this, the weakest shot I think that's ever reached the back of a net, and Balotelli was miles offside, but may or may not have been interfering with play. But then there was a lot of controversy over the penalty, which in, I think, the 97th minute saw Milan take a point from the game. Balotelli stepped up and put it away. The 21st penalty he's taken, 21st penalty he scored. But not only was it a very unconvincing performance, but Kaká is now injured and out for a month. Pauli, who's another kind of midfield creator, is out injured as well. Montolivo is going to be out for a month as well. So that's pretty much all the string pullers in the midfield.
Yeah, and their backups are really kind of functional and kind of depressing when they get together, aren't they?
So very much so.
I can see them struggling to create a lot of chances, but Balotelli's been really good at Milan, I think.
Yeah. The danger, I think, perhaps, is that without anyone to get the ball to him, there's always the risk that he's going to drift out of the game or become frustrated. I don't know what kind of midfield they're going to be able to put together for this game, but arguably the biggest danger for the Rossoneri is at the back, where they're missing their two full-backs, Abate and Dicilio. Antonini, who would have come in, they sent to Genoa and scored an absolutely brilliant Aaron Ramsey-esque volley in the derby on Sunday night. So they've got absolutely nobody at the back. They're probably going to go with people like Bonera. And they're very, very vulnerable to pace, which, as I understand it, Celtic are very much basing their game around this year. And, Celtic, of course, they had some big wins in the Champions League last year. I don't know, they might do it in this game as well.
You'd definitely fancy them if they were at home, but... They're not, so...
No, that's true. Juve are at Copenhagen. Juve, who had a 1-1 draw in the so-called Derby of Italy against Inter.
I think they're got a great chance of winning the Champions League, actually.
Winning it this year,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, partly because of what Barney said earlier. There's so many teams. I think, not to go all Sean Ing on you, but if you look at the odds, the top seven favourites for the Champions League have all changed manager. So we're a little bit in transition. Juve have got the same manager. Unlike Real Madrid and Chelsea, who've signed superstars, they've addressed their weaknesses. They didn't have any strikers. They brought strikers in. And I thought just over the two legs when they were defeated against Bayern last year, the first game, they just couldn't live with that high-tempo pressing. It was like it was a new concept to them. They weren't used to that in Serie A. But the second leg, even though they lost, they responded, they adapted, and they showed that they can learn the lessons. I think Conte's a really good manager, potentially a really great manager.
Winning the Champions League, I went to both those games, and, I mean, they just looked on a... several levels below. I mean, they were
The first game was disastrous, but I think the first 20 minutes of the second game, they were excellent. But they didn't have any quality up front, so it was almost...
Yeah, it sort of went nowhere.
Everyone looked on a different level to Bayern, apart from Arsenal.
Well, that's true. Yeah, they did come up against an awesome opposition.
Vidal must be the best midfielder around at the moment.
Well, you look at their whole midfield, it's crazy. Asamoah's brilliant out on the left. Then you've got Pirlo, who's almost fallen out of favour, so good as Vidal become. And Pogba, who was a brilliant signing for them and is really coming good now. All very impressive. Interesting shout that for Juve. As I say, they're over in Copenhagen to begin their Champions League campaign. In Europa League fixtures this week, Swansea, who are playing Liverpool, of course, Monday night, will travel to Spain to meet Valencia, who've been having a bit of a rubbish start to things. We'll talk to Sid in a second. Wigan, from the Championship, We'll be travelling to Belgium to meet Zulte Waregem. No, that can't be right. But anyway, they were beaten 5-2 by Henk on Sunday. Honk. No, it's a honk, is it? Honk. Henk, that's right. It's Henk. Is it honk?
Henk, isn't it?
Henk. Henk. That's what I said. Henk. Henk. All right. Oh, for goodness sake. It's 2013, people. Yeah. Spurs at home to Tromso. There we go. They are fourth bottom of the league in Norway. I don't know how many teams there are in the Norwegian.
Four.
Just four. Yeah, but so I bet there'll be loads of goals in that because the Norwegians are goal crazy. Oh, tell you what, we haven't done the rest of the Premier League, so I'll quickly mention that Fulham West Brom.
West Brom.
Scored a goal.
Yeah, they did a goal. Yeah. They were the only team in the top five leagues in Europe who hadn't scored.
Hmm?
And they did it in late in injury time. Gareth McCauley header to equalise against Fulham.
Right, and spark a wave of unrest among the Craven Cottage faithful. They were chanting Joll out.
Oh, were they?
Joll out, rather, actually.
All right, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it seems a weird one, that, isn't it? You don't associate Fulham necessarily with people yelling for people to be sacked.
Times are changing at the Cottage, of course, with the advent of all this money from Florida.
Yeah, it's obviously their horizons have lifted. They now expect better than this. They're not going to put up with it.
Nope.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame, really. I think Martin Yol's done a pretty good job. And indeed, they have a good team to watch.
They do, don't they? No Dan Bent, of course, this weekend. Saints took on West Ham in the sort of game Roy Hodgson would enjoy, as Jacob Steinberg opened his match report. 0-0. Question now being asked down on the South Coast, is it Osvaldo or Lambert? Because the two together clearly don't play.
I expected Osvaldo to play wide and Lambert to play through the middle, but that hasn't happened yet. I'm surprised at that. It was also odd that Ramirez stayed on the bench the whole game, because what Southampton were clearly missing was a link between the two central midfielders and the front four. But I think Ramirez is a really good player.
Yeah. All right. And you've also got Newcastle, who've now put back-to-back wins together. They beat Aston Villa, much to everyone's surprise. Another terrific performance from Ben Arthur. And but we don't talk about Newcastle unless things go wrong.
Well, Loic Remy is injured, yep. I think, ooh, so that went wrong.
All right. And Hull drew 1-1 with Cardiff. Danny Graham. What an extraordinary opportunity he had to end his 20 Premier League game without a goal run. But instead, he's now up to 21. He's like the Mario Balotelli of missing goal chances. This was a doozy, as they say. I don't know if you saw, but anyway, now that's enough of all of that. Let's finish off today's pod with our man in Madrid, Sid. It's Sid Lowe.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hi, Sid. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Good. We missed you last week because you were recording an audiobook of your latest work. Is that right?
Yeah, I was. It's quite a strange experience.
So how did that work? You were just basically reading out your words. Did you do voices, yeah, you know, when there were quotes? Did you do voices?
Sadly, we didn't get this in the background.
Ah.
But Stella, I think Stella's decided that the dog next door wants shouting down.
Right. Did you do voices, Sid, when you had quotes in the text? Did you do voices?
Well, one of the sort of difficult things is that because it's a book that's full of voices,
right,
and obviously it's me that's just reading them, and you can't, you know, when you're reading a book, you can't say open quotes, close quotes. So there's that slight, that kind of slight intonation you have to do when you're quoting someone else. It's it's quite a strange and difficult skill.
What about when you did a funny? Would you allow yourself a little chuckle?
No, I didn't.
Right.
Did you leave a pause?
You know what the other thing that's weird is? To be there and surrounded by people with beautiful voices, and then there's me with this kind of horrible, rough Cockney thing.
I know the feeling, Sid. I know the feeling. Anyway, that's terrific. When's the audiobook out?
The same time as the book itself, 26th of September.
Just remind us of the title, Sid.
Fear and Loathing in La Liga.
Brilliant. Brilliant stuff. Hey, that's handy because that's exactly what we want to talk to you about because it's a big weekend in the Liga. I mean, all right, let's talk about Gareth Bale first of all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he got the goal, which of course makes everything feel much better. And actually, I think the goal almost released him a little bit. Until then, he struck me as a little bit tentative in some of his movements. He kept things very simple, which perhaps is the right thing to do. Once he'd scored, he then went on a couple of runs. He took people on a couple of times and looked reasonably strong and pretty quick, which, of course, we know that he is. And all in all, I think they'd be pretty pleased with it.
All right. And Real would be pretty pleased with Diego Lopez, who saved the result for them in that 2-2 draw at newly promoted Villarreal.
Well, in a way, saved the result for them, but far be it from me to bore you by saying things I've said before, but the nature of the Spanish league means that any points dropped is quite a big deal. So, I mean, he saved the defeat for Real Madrid, but in terms purely of the points and their position in the league table, then a draw is potentially quite damaging as well. But Diego Lopez was fantastic. Yeah, there was a headline in one of the Spanish papers the following morning that said, Diego Lopez basically kind of stokes the flames of the goalkeeping debate with a brilliant performance. And I was thinking, surely if he does anything with the debate, he closes the debate. Because, all this sense that, well, he's not good enough and Casillas is the best in the world and so on and so forth. Well, actually, Diego Lopez has played pretty well since he's been at Real Madrid. But then the debate has been opened, at least in part, or at least reopened, at least in part, by the fact that Ancelotti says that Casillas will come in the Champions League. So Real Madrid will have different goalkeepers for different tournaments.
But it is a bit of a risk, isn't it, to bring in a keeper who... I mean, he played for Spain the other day, I guess, but huge game away to Galatasaray.
Yeah, it is a big game. And I think if you look at the group, there's no doubt that Real Madrid should get through. And last year, they were fundamentally pretty comfortable against Galatasaray. The slight wobble came in the second leg when they already thought they were through and it was basically done. But of all the games, of all the games to start with, if they were going to play Galatasaray, they probably wouldn't have wanted it at the very start away from home because Madrid themselves are still slightly finding their feet. And so perhaps it's more difficult now than it would have been in a couple of months' time. So in that sense, yeah, it's relatively complex. But, even though Casillas hasn't played much, and as you say, he did play for Spain, he's still a very good goalkeeper.
Mm, fair enough. Galatasaray strong at home, only 2 defeats in the last 14 European fixtures. Impressive record there for the Turks. All this debate, though, about goalkeepers and indeed Gareth Bale's brilliant debut has been a little bit put in the shade by the exciting news from Ronaldo. As you've probably seen, he's got a new underwear range that's coming out next week, Sid. What exactly is that about?
I hadn't seen that. That wasn't a piece of news that, pardon the pun, particularly stood out for me.
Oh, right. Well, now, yeah, he tweeted about it, so that's something we can all look forward to, and maybe the sight of him on the side of a bus sporting said smalls in the near future. But it's a sideline for him because the football business is going even better than ever with that new contract, eh?
Yeah, his contract renewal was announced on Sunday morning after that result in Villarreal on a Saturday night. He's renewed his deal till 2018. The figures being filtered out, as usual, you have to tread very carefully with them because you get told very different things by different sides of the deal. I think this is almost certainly going to make Ronaldo the best paid player in the world. Although when he was asked that yesterday, he said, it doesn't matter if I'm the first, second or third best player in the world. Now, even that's significant because at the time of the renewal, in other words, 2 days ago, he wasn't even in the top 10 best paid players in the world because, of course, there's been a raft of players on new deals since then. And Ronaldo had been stalling on this deal and slowing it down, partly because, of course, that really does strengthen his hand in terms of negotiations. The more nervous Real Madrid get, the bigger his salary can be. And as I say, it depends who you believe, but I've seen figures anywhere from 16 million to 21 million euros a year. After tax, by the way, and although that in itself, most players get paid after tax so that they are aware that they're not going to be affected by any tax changes, the impact on Real Madrid is colossal because before he was on 10 million euros a year after tax, but because of what gets known here as the Beckham Law, that tax rate was 23%. Because that Beckham Law has been repealed, the tax rate is now at 52%. Now, from Ronaldo's point of view, because it's a net amount, so what? But from Madrid's point of view, of course, it means the increase in what it costs them to pay Ronaldo each year is absolutely, absolutely enormous. I mean, I think this means now it's going to cost Real Madrid around about 43, 44 million euros a year to pay him.
What percentage of the Spanish economy does Cristiano Ronaldo now represent? That's a rhetorical question. I don't expect you to know the answer to that.
I don't know the answer to that.
All right. Now, all very exciting.
Quite a lot.
Barcelona are not top of the league because they begin with B and Atletico Madrid begin with A. So, yeah. So they're top of the league, Atletico Madrid, 4-2 win over Almeria, am I right?
Almeria, yeah.
Yep. And what did Barcelona do?
Well, Barcelona won 3-2 against Sevilla. By the way, very quickly, before I say Barcelona, just worth pointing something out. We've all talked about Bale, but Villarreal were fantastic against Real Madrid. Really, really good. So anyway, Barcelona. Barcelona won 3-2 against Sevilla. 2-0 up with, I think I'm right in saying, 10 minutes to go. Sevilla then get a goal. It gets to 2-2 in the 91st, and then Barcelona win it in the 93rd. The last 10 minutes were pretty insane, because it could actually have been more goals, even though that sounds like quite a lot already. Sevilla also had a goal disallowed for reasons that I still do not fully understand, although for one of those classic disallowed goals that happens a lot in Spain, where if a few people jump in a penalty area, referees in Spain appear to bottle it and just decide, you know what, I'm going to give a foul just in case something happens, which, of course, is an absurd approach, and it's always a foul against an attacker. It's unbelievably easy to give a foul against an attacker who, as far as I could see and as far as anyone could see, did absolutely nothing wrong. Barcelona, they just look so ropey at the back, but then they look really quite good going forward. Messi's run for the winner was superb, and Neymar played really, really well as well. Some really, really gorgeous touches during the game. So I suppose you could look at it and say, well, more of the same from Barcelona. What on earth they're doing in terms of squad construction, it's just baffling. What the hell are they thinking of? It's not that hard, surely, to go and find a centre-back from somewhere.
They should play to their strengths. Isn't that right, Barney?
Yeah, we were just saying this about Arsenal. I mean, it's kind of fun, though, isn't it? When you've got a thing and you just keep doing that thing more and more.
Yeah, they're the status quo of world football. Loving it. Danny Alves on the score sheet.
Hang on, when you say the status quo of world football, do you mean that every single game is exactly the same?
No.
I suppose that's more or less true, isn't it?
I think there's a huge difference between whatever you want and pictures of matchstick men if you want to go into
Get out. Every status quo song sounds the same. They are quite literally the status quo.
Have you never seen Quo before they went denim? They were sort of glam rock outfit.
Flower childy.
Yeah, they were flower childy. They were pictures of Manchester men very much in that era. Yeah.
I must confess, I can't claim sufficient knowledge to be able to put them in their various eras.
Okay, how about this one? That's Quo. Yeah.
We've just turned into Buzzcocks. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Now,
I don't know what the song is. Sorry.
It's pictures of matchstick men.
But it's great, that song. If you watch the video of it, they're still standing there doing their kind of Quo thing, even though it's all ethereal and kind of 60s.
It sounds a lot like Sandstorm.
Well, they can't get out of character, even when they're out of character.
By Cast.
Yeah. Remember Cast?
First ever, and possibly last ever, mention of Cast on this.
Yeah, they had a song called Sandstorm, which I always think sounds a lot like pictures of
I don't think it is the first mention, because I think I mentioned before that John Power was playing a gig in somewhere in Brixton.
Surely he have any old songs he'd like
12 quid to see John Power. I mean, me and a mate were going to go just for old time's sake, and then we completely forgot about it. So sorry, John, if you're listening and no one turned up. We did mean to go.
If you are listening, John, do you have any old records that you don't need anymore that we could use as our theme music? Or have Mogwai come back?
No, I think you've upset Mogwai.
All right. Okay. I did want to ask you about Dani Alves, who scored against Sevilla. And Eric Abidal reveals he wanted to give him his liver.
Yeah. Abidal was on a radio station in France yesterday, and he was asked about the fact that Dani Alves, for those who don't know, this year is wearing 22 rather than 2, as he's been wearing for the previous, whatever it is, 5 or 6 years. And that 22, obviously, he's wearing because it's Abidal's shirt, and it's in honour of Abidal, who departed the club in the summer. And Abidal was asked about this in the interview, and he said, well, it goes deeper than that. Dani Alves actually offered me part of his liver for the transplant. Now, obviously, that leaves a lot of questions unanswered. For example, to what extent was it compatible? Why couldn't he do it? Whether being a professional athlete means you can't, or whether he was told he wasn't allowed to, or whatever it may be. But, of course, none of that takes away from the fundamental thing, which is, I think, an extraordinary gesture. And for all the kind of outward, what would you call it, signs of frivolity, it offers up a very, very different perspective on Dani Alves.
Yeah, well, he's kind of like the Mogwai of footballing transplant donations. He didn't offer a new liver, just one that he'd already used. No wonder.
Speaking of things that have already been used, by the way, you might have noticed that Cristiano Ronaldo did his renewal yesterday in a pair of glasses.
Yes.
And it caused a real stir. And I thought, well, it's just the same glasses that Dani Alves has been wearing for the last year anyway.
Are they the same glasses?
Well,
did he donate his glasses?
Because Dani Alves has couriered them to Madrid, so especially for the occasion.
Okay.
Very generous man.
Yeah. That presumably was kind of marketing approved. Has he got a range of specs coming out, Ronaldo?
Not as far as I know. He was quite funny, though. He came in the specs and then he took them off. And at the end, when he came through the photos, and he's there surrounded by the Real Madrid board of directors, which, as you can imagine, is kind of a, you know, quite a stuffy, quite staid, quite old-fashioned group of men. And Ronaldo gets the glasses back out and starts doing silly poses with them, which I think in another context might not have been so funny, but watching him with this kind of stuffed shirt brigade was quite good.
Yeah. All right. I'm liking Cristiano Ronaldo.
I must admit, I don't fully understand why people dislike him. I like him as well. I think he's definitely got a spark of charisma. I think he's quite funny. I think he's much sharper than people think. Mm. And I don't know if you saw it yesterday, but he answered one of the questions in English, and his English is still exceptional.
Sid, that's been a very thorough and wide-ranging Spanish roundup. Many, many thanks for that. We've reached the end of, I think, our memory stick for today's podcast. Cheers, Sid. Look forward to hearing you in book form and perhaps on the pod soon, after the Champions League, Thursday maybe, if you're free.
Yeah, I hope to speak to him Thursday, by which time, of course, I would have also have been at the first ever game in the new San Mamés, which could be quite exciting.
Ooh, super. Many thanks then, Sid. Speak to you Thursday.
Okay, my pleasure.
Super. Well, it's been a brief little podette, this one. But unless there's anything else, Bun, is there anything else?
I thought it was interesting about players wanting to be the best player in the world.
Mm.
I think players genuinely take that really seriously. You wonder how important is it to have another... But I spoke to someone who spoke to one of the most well-celebrated English players of his generation who may well still be playing recently.
Mm.
And their question to him was, what ambition have you got left in football? And his answer immediately was, I want to be the best paid player in the world.
You're kidding.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not surprising, but to come out and say it as though that's a kind of acceptable, not to say I want to win the World Cup or something.
Was it Cashley?
No, it wasn't. But but I think that players generally do rank themselves in those terms. Funny world.
Interesting. Barry, I know you had a couple of exciting stories that you were eager to get in. Mark House's autobiography, his chumminess with several leading figures in football, and also, intriguingly, a parachutist.
Yeah, a parachutist landed on the field during the second half of Chester and Salisbury City.
Inadvertently?
In the conference. Yeah, it wasn't like a stunt or anything. I think he just
missed.
Maybe got lost or missed wherever he was supposed to land and saw this big green field and went, oh, I'll land there. But Danny Higginbotham, who's playing for Chester now, tweeted, like, the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in a football pitch happened today. Halfway through the second half, out of nowhere, a parachutist landed on the pitch. No idea where he was supposed to land, but he hit the ground hard.
Right.
And then he just got up, got his parachute together, and off he went.
Right. There's a joke there about payments, isn't there? But we'll move on.
It's good, though, isn't it? It's very much a and finally.
Quirky. Yeah, lovely.
Regional news.
Michael?
No, on the train here, I sat opposite Colin Jackson, which was
really
mildly exciting.
Of Athletics fame?
Yep, that same one, yeah.
All right.
He kept his iPhone in his wallet, which I found interesting. Never seen that before.
I've never seen that either. He's either got a very small iPhone or a very big wallet.
No, he's a big wallet.
Big wallet. Yeah. Good. Well, then, on that bombshell, we reached the end of today's Football Weekly. We're back on Thursday, yes. With a reaction to the Champions League and all that sort of thing. Have a super week. Many, many thanks for your indulgence today. Barney Roney, Barry Glendening, and Michael Cox of ZonaMarking.net and producer Ben. Speak to you Thursday.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life online. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today with no credit card required. And as a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 20% off in September by using the offer code Guardian. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website.